You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast, where we explore a huge range of crucial issues and exciting developments in the food industry with brilliant guests drawn from all areas of expertise. I'm Stephen Gates. I'm a TV presenter and writer, and I specialize in food and science. This podcast is all about the role of the gut microbiome in immune health, and it's brought to you by Food Matters, and this week in partnership with Clasado. We're joined by Dr. Caroline Childs, lecturer in nutritional sciences within medicine at the University of Southampton.
Hello.
Dr. Gemma Walton, lecturer in metagenomics at University of Reading.
Hello.
And Dr. Lucien Hartham, R&D director at Clasado Biosciences.
Hello.
So we're going to start off exploring the importance of the gut microbiome in health and immunity. Gemma, can you give us a bit of an introduction? What is the gut microbiome and how does it change through our lives?
Thanks, Stefan. We've actually all got trillions of bacteria living inside us and on us. So actually, we've got more bacteria in and on us than we've got human cells, which I find quite fascinating. So we're all more microbial than we are human in a way. And these microbes all do different things. Now, the majority of these bacteria that we've got on us actually live within our large intestine. So they're going through our intestinal tract, and the biggest amounts are in our large intestine. And these bacteria, they're not just passive diners. They're not just there doing nothing. They're actually doing things. They're creating different end products, and those end products can have a real effect on us. So I think it's quite fascinating that we can actually change these bacteria through our diet, and they can actually have an impact on us and our health. So yeah, the bacteria in and on us are there, and they do, as you said, change throughout our life. So when we're born, we get our first big microbial meal. So this is normally from the mother's vaginal tract and also the mother's fecal bacteria. So we'll get bacteria introduced in our bodies from this. And the bacteria are going to grow up, use oxygen rapidly in the intestine, and then we're going to get an environment suitable for growth of bacteria without oxygen. So we'll get bacteria growing up that don't use oxygen very well. If you're born by cesarean section, you'll get a slightly different impact of bacteria to start with in your life, because you'll get maybe some more skin microbiota than the vaginal and fecal microbiota. So you will get differences in your bacteria. But the next thing to impact on the bacteria is the diet that we have. So obviously, as an infant, that gives us the option of breastfeeding and formula feeding. And what we can see is we can see differences in the microbiota of individuals that are breastfed versus formula fed. So in those infants that are breastfed, they actually have a greater abundance of a bacteria genus called bifidobacteria. So this is a group of bacteria associated with positive effects. So the breastfed infants have a greater diversity, so more different types of bifidobacteria, and a higher amount of bifidobacteria as well. Whereas the formula-fed infants seem to have a lower amount of bifidobacteria and maybe some more diversity in terms of other types of bacteria within their feces, within their guts. So we've got differences that happen there. And actually, breastfed infants are often linked to fewer gastrointestinal infections. So that's quite interesting that they've got differences in their microbiota and differences linked there in terms of gastro infections. So as we go through life, when we move to solid foods, our microbiota becomes more diverse. We get more of a range of organisms because we've got more foods to feed our bacteria. And then because we've moved on to solid foods, our bacteria are more stable. Although changes that we have to our diet will impact on them, we're kind of having a more stable bacterial population in terms of diversity and range of bacteria there throughout life, throughout adulthood. And then when we reach old age, we're actually seeing some other changes happening in these microorganisms. And these coincide with changes that are happening to appetite and exercise patterns. And these can include lower levels of bifidobacteria, this bacteria that we've linked to infants. And then much lower levels might be seen during the aging process. And these changes also coincide with increases in illness susceptibility as well. So that could be quite interesting as well.
So that's quite interesting. We've heard lots about the microbiome being linked to health, but what are those links? And you know, what is the role of the gut barrier? Is it, are these questions about obesity and allergies?
So what I would say is there is no defined healthy microbial community, because all of us have a range of different bacteria living within our guts. Some of them are going to be positive, some of them are going to be negative, and some of them are going to be benign. So we've all got a different balance of bacteria living inside our guts. But what I will say is that when different bacterial communities have been studied in people with different conditions, differences have been seen. So, for example, people with irritable bowel syndrome have been seen to have lower levels of this bifidobacteria than healthy individuals. Also, as you mentioned, with obesity, there's been links with different types of bacteria, different levels of bacteria seen with people with obesity and metabolic conditions. So we are seeing changes or differences in the microbial population associated with different conditions. You mentioned about the gut barrier function. Now, interestingly, there does seem to be changes in the barrier function of the gut. So we've all got our epithelial cell wall in the gut, and this keeps what's inside our lumen separate from our bloodstream. So things are kept apart. Whereas a high-fat diet actually allows more things to cross this intestinal barrier, and it seems to change our tight junctions, and more things are allowed across. Now, our gut bacteria seems to be quite well linked to this. And actually, if we boost our numbers of bifidobacteria, for example, we can maintain a tighter barrier function and let fewer things through. And this is also important because it seems to be linked very much to inflammation, which Dr. Caroline Childs will talk to you a bit more about in a moment. One thing that I find encouraging is with the differences in the gut bacteria and conditions, when studies have used strategies to change the gut bacteria, what they've actually seen is shifts in the gut bacteria have been associated with positive health effects. Again, I'll come back to the example of irritable bowel syndrome. So by changing the gut bacteria, fewer symptoms of irritable bowel syndrome have been seen. There's also a range of other conditions where interventions have actually helped against things like diarrhea. So again, there's a lot to be said about the gut and what it can do for our health.
So how can we influence the microbiome to optimize it for our gut bacteria? And what does a regular diet do for it?
Okay, so there's a few ways we can specifically influence our gut bacteria. So we can actually take supplements that can support our gut bacteria. So this could be a prebiotic. Now, a prebiotic is a food that we can actually eat ourselves that feeds our gut bacteria. So there's no bacteria in a prebiotic. A prebiotic is literally a food ingredient that gets down to our large intestine, and then it's used by our gut bacteria. And then you increase the activity or numbers of positive bacteria, and that has a beneficial effect on your health. So a prebiotic is one approach. The other approach is actually a probiotic. Now, a lot more people tend to know about the probiotics, and these are the live bacteria themselves that are associated with positive effects. So when you eat these live bacteria in adequate amounts, they can lead to a positive effect to the host. So if you eat them, they can have a beneficial effect on you. So these are two of the main approaches, or you can link them together to have a symbiotic. And that can also have a positive effect on the host by boosting the positive bacteria that are already native to the gut and adding probiotics at the same time. So those are supplements that you can use in the diet to actually help improve your gut health.
So what dietary sources are there for prebiotics that can feed gut bacteria?
Prebiotics are often naturally occurring. The best example of a natural prebiotic is breast milk. But obviously, the other examples that we can find from vegetables include things like chicory roots. So inulin is found in high amounts in chicory roots. We've also got things like bananas, garlic, Jerusalem artichokes. even dandelion leaves. So you can find them occurring quite naturally in some parts of the diet. Now, bananas is one source that I mentioned. In a typical banana, you can probably get 0.5 gram of inulin. You probably want about 5 grams of inulin in the diet to get a prebiotic effect. So if you have a varied diet with onions and garlic and everything else, you're going to be boosting your amount of inulin. But obviously, if you have to eat 10 bananas to get a prebiotic effect, that's a lot of bananas, which is why the supplements are also a very good approach to getting a good amount of prebiotic in the diet.
And Caroline, have you got anything to add to that as well?
What Gemma said is absolutely right. We can find prebiotics naturally occurring in foods that we eat, like onions, for example, but it may be that we need to eat 2 onions to get as much prebiotic as we can easily obtain from a sachet. I think the other interesting thing is that sometimes food waste products can actually be used to make these prebiotics, so reducing food wastage. So, for example, I'm aware of prebiotics which are made from corn cob husks and mango skins, which would usually be discarded in mango juice production. So there's double advantages of reducing food waste as well.
I love the sound of that. Now, back to Gemma, how long would you need to change your diet for in order to see a change in your gut microbiome?
It's pretty rapid. So a lot of the human studies that have been done have interventions of 2 to 3 weeks, and we're seeing shifts in the bacteria already that quickly, and it's going to be much more rapid than that because that's just when they're testing the fecal bacteria. So the changes really are happening quite quickly. You're providing a new sort of food source for your bacteria and they're able to use it, and if that same food source is provided, then you're supporting that community of bacteria in that way, so you're able to change them really quite rapidly.
Okay, now let's go back to Caroline. How does the immune system work, and what happens if and when it goes wrong?
The thing I love so much about working with the immune system is how wonderfully complex it is. I'll try and break it down into a nutshell for you. In your immune system, you've got a range of specialised organs, so things like your bone marrow and thymus are areas where immune cells are made. But then you have organs around your body which help to educate those immune cells. So you might have heard of your spleen, for example, or lymph nodes. And if you've probably all had this feeling of your lymph nodes getting swollen in your neck when you've had an infection, that is literally your immune cells duplicating and replicating within your lymph nodes in your neck. And so you can feel them getting larger. We have these specialized tissues around our body and immune cells located in all parts of our body, for example, in our skin, circulating in our bloodstream. But the vast majority of immune cells we have are associated with our gut. It's been estimated about 70% of them are connected with the gut. But in terms of how the immune system works, it has to be able to protect us against immediate challenges. So, for example, if you get a splinter in your finger, you don't want to wait a few days for your immune system to sort that out. So immediately you will recognize these feelings of your finger becomes red, swollen, hot, sore, and you may lose function. And that's the immediate effect of your immune system. But we also have an ability for our immune system to learn. So for example, both my daughters had chickenpox around the age of 2 to 3 years, quite unpleasant week for them. But now their immune system has learned what chickenpox virus is. And if and when they re-encounter that throughout their childhood, they're now protected against that because their immune system can respond quickly and effectively. And that's the principle of vaccination. So we expose ourselves to a small part of an infection or virus in order to build an educated immune system that can respond quickly. Sometimes it does go a bit wrong. So, for example, many of us, like me, may experience asthma and allergic disease. So right now we're entering hay fever time, which is not pleasant for those of us with allergies, but that's my immune system responding inappropriately to what should be a normal environmental exposure to pollen. But my immune system thinks this is something dangerous that it needs to protect me from. It can also go a bit wrong in terms of inflammation. So we talked about having a splinter in your finger, and you want your finger to be sore for a short period of time and then return to normal. But sometimes we can get inflammatory diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, where for some reason our immune system starts attacking, for example, our own joints in that condition, causing them to be inflamed and progressively damaged over a long period of time.
And is there a sort of a symbiotic relationship between the gut and the immune system?
Yeah, they're extremely closely connected. And think about the challenge we put on our immune system every day. Each of us eats 1 to 2 kilos of food a day, and our immune system has to constantly be sensing that and working out, is this something safe which I should allow to continue being absorbed? Or have you just eaten salmonella and I need to start making you vomit and have diarrhea as quickly as possible? Equally, we have to detect, you know, is this a safe food? Or if our immune system gets it wrong, for example, you might have a peanut allergy and your body is responding to something which you would hope it might leave alone. So our immune system has a huge job to do in correctly responding to danger in the food that we eat without over-responding. So we have these massive links between what's in our guts and our immune system. Our immune cells are influenced by the bacteria that we have in our gut, the chemicals that they make as part of their normal lifespan processes, and also those interactions they have directly with our immune system.
So is there a way to support the immune system through what you eat?
So good nutrition is essential to how your immune system works. So there's that immediate link with the gut. But we also see differences in patterns of gut bacteria linked with particular diseases associated with your immune system going wrong, such as allergy. So there are definitely clear links between our gut and immune system.
And so if you can influence your gut microbiome through the diet, what's the best way to do this? Is it better and more effective by eating whole foods or by using food supplements?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's one which is a struggle for nutritionists quite often, because the food that we eat is not just a collection of nutrients. You know, we eat foods for birthdays and celebrations. So it's not just about me waking up in the morning and saying, right, I need 45 grams of protein today. Where shall I get it from? You know, we don't think in that way. Broadly speaking, as a nutritionist, we struggle to meet the current recommendations. So a simple example, we're all recommended to eat 5 fruit and vegetables a day. Most of us don't achieve that. It's only about 20% of people that actually achieve that. So if we were able to follow those dietary guidelines effectively, I would suggest that would be the best way and the way that we should aim for. But we may need to be a bit pragmatic and say, okay, we see a clear link between, for example, gut microbiome and risk of allergy in children. We could tell all the mothers to go and eat more fruits and vegetables, but they may find it more achievable to take a supplement, because then they don't have to change their lifestyle patterns. And behavioral psychologists will expand on how difficult it is to get people to change their pattern of living.
And how far does this go? I mean, are there benefits from supplementary prebiotics over prebiotics that could be found in food?
I think it's certainly possible to get something which is a higher dose and over a longer period of time through a supplement compared to a foodstuff. But I think ideally we might hope that people have a healthy, balanced diet. But I think perhaps in reality that may be difficult to achieve. And there may be certain circumstances where you wish to give an extra intervention. So one example might be people who've been hospitalised and taking antibiotics. We know that giving them a probiotic supplement can reduce by around half their chance of having diarrhoea as a consequence of taking that antibiotic. So that may be an effective time in which supplements are very useful in that targeted way.
In terms of what Caroline says, absolutely, a well-balanced diet can be very, very helpful. But I like the specific nature of prebiotics and probiotics as well, because you know with a prebiotic, you're absolutely targeting positive bacteria within the large intestine. With the probiotic, you're adding a very specific gut bacteria into the large intestine, which might have a positive effect. So they're more a targeted approach with the probiotic, and with a prebiotic, you're targeting specific groups of bacteria. So whilst you can get it from a balanced diet, you know you're being more specific with what you're targeting with the supplements in a way.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, Lucien, let's move on to you. Caroline's already spoken about the cross-fertilisation between gut and other organ systems and how that impacts health. Do you have examples of studies where the gut microbiota has been influenced and that you've seen some outcomes on immunity?
Yes, as said by the previous guests, evidence suggests the close involvement of the gut and its microbiome in various aspects of human health. And it is the predominance of beneficial bacteria, such as bifidobacteria, that ensures a healthy environmental condition within the gut. And because of that intense crosstalk between the gut and other organs, such as the brain, It implicates much broader health aspects within the body. So in terms of crosstalk, for me, next after the gut is the immune system. As also said by Dr. Caroline Childs, about 70% of our immune cells reside in the gut. And that's also because the presence or entry of potential pathogens in the gut requires a well-functioning immune system to prevent infections. And the nature and composition of the gut bacteria can influence the immune system. As also said, certain fibers and prebiotics can stimulate the growth of beneficial bacteria in the gut. And one of the most studied examples of, for example, prebiotic oligosaccharides is Bimuno. Bimuno is a unique targeted prebiotic which contains a composition of galacto-oligosaccharides, the so-called GOS. And when used as a supplement to the human diet, Bimuno has shown to selectively fuel these beneficial bifidobacteria in the colon. And the stimulation of bifidobacteria in the gut by Bimuno has repeatedly been shown in studies in healthy adults, but also in cohorts of irritable bowel syndrome and obese individuals. Having said that, a balanced gut microbiota composition is essential for having a properly working immune defense and immune system. And the maintenance of a healthy immune system involves also a well-orchestrated regulation of various types of immune cells and signaling molecules that they produce in the body. The positive impact of Bimuno on human health, including the immunity, has mostly been associated with the metabolites produced by the beneficial bacteria, the so-called short-chain fatty acids. So these are products produced by these beneficial bacteria. And the effectiveness of Bimuno in strengthening the body's defense and immune health has been extensively studied. Again, I'm a bit separating maybe here immune parameters related to the so-called acquired immune system that develops over lifetime, and the first line of immune defense, the so-called innate immunity. The innate immunity is mainly non-specific and involves a non-specific barrier, for instance, by intact cell walls, mucosal layers, and secretion of non-specific molecules, which are primarily responsible for the prevention of foreign invaders. And these protective defense system is therefore key in the protection against potential pathogens and their toxins.
Can you give us any more examples from the studies that you've mentioned about this idea of the first line of immune defense and what the other immune parameters mean in terms of outcomes as well?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So again, an unbalanced gut microbiota can make a person more susceptible for pathogens. That's first of all. Studies have shown that, for example, Bimuno reduces the adhesion of pathogens to gut cells and increases also the release of certain substances such as secretory IgA, that is to prevent invasion of pathogens. This strongly suggests a positive effect by this GOS on this innate immune system, thereby playing an important role in influencing subsequent infections. And this effect is reflected basically in studies from the universities of Reading and Oslo in Norway a couple of years ago, where Bimuno was shown to reduce diarrhea caused by pathogens. Furthermore, the immune system has, of course, to act quickly and precisely to protect and keep the body healthy. And this involves, again, that complex gut-immune interaction. So it's known that the immune system can be influenced by lifestyle, by stress, poor nutrition. It also changes as people become older. Particularly with aging, the decline of immune function, the so-called immunosenescence, may play a bigger role, since the immune system may act more slowly and less powerfully to infections. And this can affect, of course, all parts of the immune system, making a person more prone to getting ill as they age, or they can also result in more frequent infections that are harder to recover from. And Bimuno has, again, demonstrated significant benefits of several immune parameters. I'm going to give an example, a clinical study from some years ago with about 40 subjects, roughly between 65 and 80 years of age. so a bit the older population, where Byneuno was given for 10 weeks, it proved to increase the phagocytic activity of white blood cells. And that's exactly a capacity by these cells by which they internalize and destroy or eat bacteria. In this study, this GOS also stimulated the activity of another type of immune cells, so-called natural killer cells. And these cells play a role in targeting and killing, for example, virally infected cells. And these findings then were confirmed later in 2015 by another clinical study, also in about 40 subjects with an age between 65 and 80 years. And this study demonstrated, again, the supplementation of this Byneuno for 10 weeks that can maintain the immune resilience. So even when people are healthy, but also a bit older. So interestingly, in these two studies, just as an example, an increase in the anti-inflammatory cytokine, one of the examples was interleukin-10, specific cytokine, but also together with a decrease of pro-inflammatory cytokines, such as IL-6 and TNF-alpha were observed. So just a couple of examples that there was a clear effect on several immune parameters.
Now, you mentioned that some studies with Byneuno GOS were based on older people. Could you extrapolate that? And would the same trend on immune modulation apply for other sectors of population?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, as a little sidestep, I like to mention actually shortly two other studies with different subject populations. One study was published in 2016 by the group of Dr. Neil Williams from Nottingham Trent University. In that study, he found that a group of subjects with exercise-induced bronchoconstriction, so it's basically a phenotype of asthma, Byneuno as a food supplement improved respiratory function and also reduced systemic concentrations of some inflammatory markers, the so-called Th2-driven inflammatory markers. And another study in overweight adults who had an average BMI of 30, 31, and with three or more risk factors associated with metabolic syndrome, found that Byneuno supplementation significantly lowered CRP. Well, CRP is known as the general systemic marker of inflammation. And in that study, also fecal calprotectin, which is a specific neutrophil-derived marker of intestinal inflammation, was significantly reduced. So, just two examples of other populations.
What are the key benefits of taking Byneuno, and what are the key principles of how it works?
Yeah, in terms of key features and benefits of prebiotic oligosaccharides as functional ingredients anyway, and I think Byneuno in particular, these are safe, they are stable, they are versatile ingredients that resist gastric acid, for instance, also an important aspect if we talk about functional ingredients. They resist also fluctuation in temperature and have also a high effectiveness, basically. And I think that's slightly different from probiotics, which are, you know, also great functional ingredients, but are sometimes more vulnerable and susceptible for degradation. Supported by several studies, the beneficial effects on immunity are most likely through selective increase of bifidobacteria and the subsequent production of their metabolites, the so-called short-chain fatty acids. And these short-chain fatty acids are known to have immunomodulatory effects. However, interestingly, also more recent research indicate that components of Byneuno can also directly and positively modulate immune system function more independently of the gut microbiota. And this means a type of direct contribution to innate immune modulation, which is through direct interaction of the ingredient with immune cells. And I like to refer to a recent in vitro study by Dr. Newberg from the USA, who is also an expert in the composition of human milk and components thereof. And he showed also that Byneuno can directly reduce the cytokine-induced inflammatory responses of human intestinal cells, epithelial cells. So this further supports the overall role of Byneuno in strengthening the immune health.
So would you need to take Bimuno every day in order to see the benefits? And are there long-term effects?
Yeah, again, a great question. So it's known that at the level of the gut microbiota, a bifidogenic effect is not everlasting or not very long-lasting. When people start using pre- or probiotic-containing foods or supplements, most likely there is a build-up period where the effect on bifidobacteria increase can be measured after a certain period, let's say within days, 2 weeks. And that can differ between individuals. That's also something that we have to keep in mind. But Bimuno, again, as the example, has shown to results on bifidobacteria increase after 7 days and also related to symptoms or GI symptoms. The same is true when people stop the intake of prebiotic or prebiotic GOS, such as Bimuno. Also, after a certain time, again, over a time course, I would say, of weeks, the effects fade out. So also for immune modulation, consistent intake is key. And in studies, we started to see effects on immune parameters after a number of weeks of intake.
What would you say are the key take-home messages for our listeners?
Overall, the gut microbiome, it has a significant influence on the overall health, as the intense crosstalk between the gut and other organ systems has been mentioned today, specifically its interplay with the immune system. So let's say an unbalanced gut microbiome as well as compromised gut function can have a broad impact on human health, including infections and inflammation. Secondly, it's known that foods and dietary elements can largely influence the composition of the gut microbiota. And first and foremost, certain fibers and prebiotics, whether it is through our daily food or through food supplements, they can stimulate growth of beneficial bacteria like bifidobacteria in the large intestine. Scientifically, extensive research and many clinical studies have shown the effectiveness of prebiotics, including Bimuno, and how it contributes to gut health. Beyond its prebiotic effect and gut health effects, it has shown immune modulating effects, which are through strengthening the first line of immune defense, through gut microbiota modulation, through production of short chain fatty acids, with the subsequent effects on immune cell functioning and cytokine release, and which can be also by direct interaction with immune cells and intestinal cells in the gut. I think the microbiome research is still a field that is massively growing and in my opinion, has nowadays more attention than it ever had. As said, associations have already been shown between the gut microbiome and brain, obesity, allergy, but especially in these times, there is a lot of attention now to immunity and the role the gut microbiome has. Maybe interestingly, and I see also the awareness among people in the generic public on the role of the gut microbiome is also increasing. So interestingly, there has been recently a call supported by more than 100 leading scientists in the UK. A call on the Secretary of State for Health and Social Care to evaluate and assess existing research, but also new emerging approaches in the context of the current health situation in the world, specifically those related to nutrition and diet and the gut microbiome, all of which impact on infection, inflammation and the immune system.
Well, that's fantastic. I think we've covered it really comprehensively. It's absolutely fascinating. So thank you so much to all of you for joining us. And we look forward to hearing more in the future. You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast from Food Matters. And this week, in partnership with Clasado, you heard from Dr. Caroline Childs, Dr. Gemma Walton, and Dr. Lucien Hawthorne. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from salmon farm sustainability to veg picking robots. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatters.co.uk. Goodbye. You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, please visit foodmatters.co.uk.